With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Bijou Podcasts.
It's a strange experience.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. That's the thing.
Yeah,
Kanye
absolutely.
Is on the record as to saying... that's a lie. Someone is on the record just saying Kanye likes it.
Yeah, I've plenty of guys that do. I mean, I've had
Have you
mates,
heard of Kanye?
Kanye. No, but I've had mates who've mentioned it and said that they
do. Oh, really?
Yeah, so yeah.
So someone's put a finger up their bum?
Yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of Couple Goals Question Mark.
Couple Goals Question Mark. Hello, everybody.
Hello, I'm Stacey Jean.
And I'm Ben Jenkins, a.k.a. Bino Jankola, a.k.a.
Okay.
Ben June.
No one needs to know your nicknames.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
They're pretty new nicknames, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They've been new since you've come into my world. People love a nickname in my life.
Yeah, one's my real name, one's my Instagram name, and one is my... home name.
Are you giving yourself a social plug already?
Yeah. At Bino Jankola. Follow along.
We'll put it in show notes. I think it may already be in show notes. I will.
Okay.
We last week spoke about, really just an intro about who we are in our relationship.
Just to
give a bit of a heads up on how we met and how we came together in a really quite short time, not long ago.
Absolutely. A few little tidbits about how we were... came together and what life has been like in those early years.
Became an us. How we became a...
Yeah.
How
yeah,
we
yeah.
joined forces. I was listening to...
joined forces?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I bumped your mic. I was listening to a podcast today by Jay Shetty and he was talking about... It's a really solid podcast. I'll put it in the show notes. But it speaks about how you should be looking to be compatible with your partner as opposed to focusing just on the chemistry.
Mm.
And one thing he was saying was in order for you to be compatible... he was saying that you need to have the same form of communication. And I was like, oh, my God, we're going to be – we're screwed.
Yeah, yeah.
We speak so differently.
So different, yeah.
So different.
No, we communicate differently.
Yeah. But we have different language as well. I'm a bit more
– different love languages.
Conversational. No, not love languages. Don't okay. confuse everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a bit more conversational. In a more serious conversation – you and I'm going to really open up and share here. You will correct even my grammar when I'm trying to talk from the heart.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that I find more annoying isn't even the word.
Mm.
I feel like I'm trying to open up my heart and be vulnerable and you're more worried about correcting my words.
I've always done that. Something I've always done. I've always been a bit of a grammar Nazi.
So your wife...
I can't help it. I've pissed off many friends with it too.
Have you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so fucking annoying. I was hoping you were going to flip it around and say something like, I need to do that to process or something. So there's going to be some form of justification as to why it's just so goddamn anal.
I don't know what it is, yeah.
So it's not any of that.
It's just something I do, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a quirk, all right? It's a quirk. It's adorable. God.
But, yeah, so anyway, so he was saying that you need to communicate. You need to come from a similar communication place. And I was like, oh, my God, that we're fucked. Like,
yeah.
And then he clarified and said what he meant was that you don't have to actually communicate the same. You need to have the same, I guess...
Intention
and requirement from your communication. Mm, so for us, for example, we very much share that when we communicate, we want to get to the bottom of something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really a let's talk about this tomorrow kind of gal.
No. No, definitely not.
Are you? Or did you change because you since being with me?
I think that is the difference between us. You're definitely not this can wait till tomorrow kind of girl. It has to be resolved now. If something happens before we go to bed, it has to be resolved before we go to bed. But I'm the kind of person who likes to ponder, so I can definitely let things sit until the next day and work it out, except for an argument. I definitely agree that those things should be resolved.
I think we kind of like to get to understand where we were each coming from if it got heated. But we did share a lot about our relationship last week, but we want this show very much to be focused on our fertility journey.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the reason I think we find that or that we've been quite motivated was, and for so many different factors, we've found that there in our story there's a lot of layers, and we'll start tonight opening up the beginning of that picture for you. But there are so many layers, and every layer we would look into, every aisle of our fertility journey, we would find little to no content around our experience because A, it's very unique, and B, I just still think that it's a conversation that people have at the beginning of their fertility journey or the very fucking end.
Yeah, yeah.
And we couldn't find a lot of it being in the midst of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think, but that's the thing, even just with one episode of this and just us starting to talk about it and it just appearing on your Instagram a little bit more about...
Biju baby hashtag.
Yeah. Hashtag Biju baby. Sorry, I just corrected there. That was exactly what I just did. Jeez, yeah. I used to caught myself out there. Oh, well. But since we've had a...
Oh, well. Win some, you lose some.
Yeah. Moving on. But, you know, a couple of, you know, we have had some messages from people who have found themselves in a similar situation to us, which is interesting. But that situation is...
Yeah, someone actually, his partner had cancer too.
Yeah.
I've only ever met...
That was my little lead.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, that's all right, though. You don't have to apologize. It's all good.
Carry on.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So painful. I'm so not used to ever speaking to anyone in this kind of environment.
No,
that's
particularly not your husband.
A rookie.
Yeah. Rookie. You just laugh away over there. Anyway, so that story was that the man in that relationship had cancer, which is what I had. I think he might have had prostate cancer as well, which is what I had when I was 36, so just coming up on 8 years ago now. And that's the resulting surgery after that cancer is what has led us to where we are now. So having to undergo IUI, potentially IVF, to conceive and have a baby. So me deciding to have my prostate removed back then is that reason. So there's several, you know, kind of treatment you can have, and that's all changed with time, even in the 7 or 8 years since I had it. But I was told by several doctors, I made sure I got several opinions, and they all said the best chance of this cancer never coming back for you is to have your prostate removed, which is what I did.
At that point, though, there wasn't an option, if I'm correct, because I've brought this up a few times when we've had really very dark moments where I think you have maybe second-guessed your decision.
Yeah.
I've reminded you, from my understanding, you would may not be here if you didn't do that. Mm. Is that the actual case?
I mean, there's different ways you can go about it. There is there's one approach that it's called the watch and wait approach, which is probably a lot more relevant to older men who are close to the end of their life, basically.
Mm.
So, you know, you could be diagnosed with prostate cancer and sit there and watch it wait, and it doesn't move, shift or change for 15 years.
And when you say doesn't move, do you want to take everyone through and maybe just backtrack a little bit about how you found the particular levels were at and all that stuff?
Yep. So your prostate is made up of cells which are called PSA, so prostate-specific antigen. So those cells can be measured. You have a blood test and it'll give you your level of PSA. And at the time, you know, at my age, it should have been sitting at around a 2.2 or something like that when it comes back. And just to go back a little bit before that, I had had that test for completely different reasons. I'd not been well the year before and something completely different, and got to a point at the start of that year where I thought it'd be a good idea for me to go and have a regular health check, like a yearly health check, and that was the first one of those. And the doctor basically said, what do you want to do? And I was like...
So it was like a routine check, like you've...
Yeah, at a GP.
Yeah, and you were like, okay, I just want to do... Something freaked me out that that happened, and you want to just make sure everything's okay.
Yeah, yeah. And look, looking back on it now...
Randomly,
that,
really.
That was my intuition. That was my intuition saying, go and do this, you know? And only now when I, you know, from, you know, now that I'm here and what I've gone through and the things I've learned, do I really understand that, that that's what it was. But so anyway, so yeah, I went and had that test and he didn't really know. Like he was asking me what I wanted to have. I'm like, you're the doctor.
Really?
You know, what would a regular health check look like? Anyway, he kind of said, well, we can do this. You know, we can test this. We can do your blood pressure. We can do all these little bits and pieces. We can do some bloods. We can check for this, this and this, you know.
All like your, what? Like be specific.
All your hormones, your cholesterol, your, you know, vitamin D, all those things you get when you have a regular health check, you know?
Yeah.
Magnesium, zinc, all those things.
Yeah.
And then he just said, look, and we can also test your PSA. You're way too young. PSA, you know, he explained to me what it was. It was, I kind of thought, when he said it, I was like, oh, I've heard of that. I'm not sure, entirely sure what it is. But I've heard those letters one after the other before. And then he said, yeah, well, it's the test to see if you have prostate cancer. It's your prostate-specific antigen we're testing. He's like, you're way too young. You're only 36, but look, while we're there, we might as well test it, yeah? And I went, okay, yeah. I'd had no reason to have any concern about testing it. So so we tested that, and then that's when the results came back, and he said, look, everything's fine, this, this, and this. He wasn't too worried. And then he said, look, your PSA is a little bit high. It's 4.4. It should be around 2.2.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give some... framing around that, you know, in men who have very advanced prostate cancer, that number can be in the hundreds, you know, or even more.
So it wasn't anything to be afraid of.
No, and my GP actually never thought it. He didn't think it was cancer. He thought, you know, there could be heaps of things. You ride a bike, it could be that you could have prostatitis. Your prostate could be irritated. A lot of like cyclists.
So if you ride that thing right up there, it could be. Well, it's just affect that level.
It's not riding anything up right up there. It's just
that seat gets really busy. Yeah.
It's just bouncing around and pressing on there. It's just it's irritating.
I have done a triathlon.
Yeah,
I know from that.
Okay, sorry. Do you want to tell us about that?
No. Okay. No.
How did that affect your prostate? No.
No, I'm just saying I understand the the seat.
Yeah, yeah.
You were so annoying tonight. And this is the thing about having a partner that's had cancer or has cancer, is that sometimes even when they're annoying, you have this second guess in your head of when they're in the midst of telling this emotional big cancer story that you can't say they're annoying because the guy had cancer.
No, you can say I'm annoying.
Of course, I've learnt that now. But when we first got together, there'd be so many times where I'll just... It might not be anything to do with your cancer story, but in the moment or whatever, someone will be asking and you'd give me the shits or I don't know, there'd been something and it was really a weird thing to kind of have to, I don't know, check yourself because you want to be kind and they're really, it really does, as you would know better than anyone, and even though I wasn't with you at the time, I feel like it really does put things into perspective pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
But it even does later. Like when you're annoyed at something, you're like, can you say you're annoyed at that? When he's talking about if he has cancer. But yeah, the answer is I totally can.
It's not a sensitive subject now. You know, I've got a sense of humor about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been different at that point. Yeah,
absolutely.
So you've gone for it, and what's the other test? Like, is it a blood test?
So it's a blood test, yeah. Right. So that's what it is. So that's what gives you your level. And so like I was saying, it came back and it was 4.4. He just thought it was prostatitis or something like that.
No, but the test now. When you knew it was 4.4, did you have another blood test after that?
Yeah, so that was it. That was like, okay, let's test again. Came back 4.4 again. Then he went, okay, let's.
Sorry to interrupt, but the bike could just be something that would have affected it temporarily.
Inflame
right.
your prostate.
So
yeah.
Right. So maybe if it came back and then it was lower. Yeah. It would have explained that. Okay, right.
Yeah, like
did you even write about this?
Anomaly. Yeah, I did back then. I did, yeah.
Did he ask you whether you were right?
Well, I did say it, but yeah.
Yeah, right.
So then he said, okay, let's treat it as if it's that, as if your prostate is irritated, and, you know, we'll put you on a course of antibiotics for 4 weeks. So I did that, went on antibiotics for 4 weeks, went back, had another blood test. Sure enough, it was 4.4 again. He thought, let's give it another go, put me on another course of antibiotics and just to try it again. And the same thing. It didn't come down.
So this is 2.5 months essentially after the original test.
Yeah.
And at this point, are you just going on with your day, like every
other
day?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was pretty confident, you know, that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Prostate cancer.
So much so that he's put you on a second dose of a month.
Yeah. I mean, look, there was definitely, you know, it planted a seed in the back of my mind. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's there, but he gave me no reason to worry. But it's impossible not to sit there and think, okay, he's mentioned the word cancer. So it's the seed is planted. But I was pretty much going about my day. But like I said, something happened to me the year before, which was kind of a long, drawn-out thing, which I ended up in hospital for as well. So I was kind of used to this kind of experience, and I think I'd been a little bit like, oh, okay, well, something else is going on kind of thing. So I think I was in a very similar mindset or
you had
like
a bit of bad, well, emotional you looked at it, place. You were a bit of bad luck.
It wasn't a shock.
You weren't having a good run.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, so I just... you know, went along with that, did the antibiotics again, came back, like I said, same number. And he said, look, I'd be remiss if I didn't doing my job if I didn't, you know, recommend you to a specialist. So that's when I went and saw a urologist. And then he said similar things. So, you know, this couldn't be cancer. You're too young. It must be something else. And he put me on antibiotics for another month as well.
So 3 months
Yeah. He just thought, well, I've got to do it too. Because, you know, that's what doctors are like. They're like, I'm not going to take his word for it. I've got to do it myself and say these things myself.
Mm. Again, don't get me started on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, didn't go down. So stayed the same. 4.4 though. Yeah. Maybe right. Gone down like a 0.1 to 4.1 or whatever. But then he just went, look, I'd be remiss in doing my job if we didn't do a biopsy. But again, he said, I'm 99% sure this isn't cancer.
Okay.
So, sure enough, I went and did a biopsy, went to the hospital and did that. You know, you go in the morning, come out in the afternoon. It's a pretty uncomfortable experience.
What is that?
You're going under. Well, basically, they stick a...
a needle in there?
No, they stick a machine in your bum. Like you're out.
I didn't know this.
Well, it's the easiest way to get to your prostate. You know, like, let's go back before that as well. Like, the normal way that men have their prostate checked by a urologist is the doctor sticks his finger up in your bum so he can feel your prostate. It's the best way
really?
To feel your prostate, yeah.
Didn't know about that.
Well, I mean, every man will know
that. Do you like a finger up the bum like some girls?
No. Well, I find it's kind of ticklish. It's a strange experience.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. That's the thing.
Yeah,
Kanye
absolutely.
Is on the record as to saying... Oh, well, no, actually, sorry, that's a lie. Someone is on the record to saying Kanye likes it.
Yeah, there's plenty of guys that do. I mean, I've had
Have you
mates...
heard of Kanye?
Kanye. No, but I've had mates who've mentioned it and said that they
Oh,
do.
Really?
Yeah, so yeah.
So someone's put a finger up their bum.
Yeah,
right.
Anyway, this feels like we're going into a different territory here. Uncharted waters.
We've gone into plenty of different territories. You're Uncharted just waters. Saying that now because we're talking about sex.
No, that's okay. Anyway, so yeah, he did that test on me and he felt my prostate and just went, okay, it feels normal to me.
So sorry, he put the camera up the...
No, sorry, this is going back. I did have that. He did stick his finger in my bum and did the prostate
really?
Check there. Yeah, the normal
so
way.
Full on. Yeah, okay.
That was before we did the biopsy.
Okay.
So you're out to it. You're unconscious when you do the biopsy.
Right.
And it's basically this machine that goes in there and then they pierce like 10 needles through the wall of your whatever it is, your not your anus, in there. They stick it in there and then they stick the needles through and that gets the easiest way. It's the only way to get through to your prostate to get some cells.
There must be some form of something there, like through the anus area.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So the needles go through and then they go into the prostate and then they extract cells and they take them out and then they test them. And then, you know, I went home. Can't remember how long it was that passed. It was probably only about 3 or 4 days. And then I had an appointment on the Monday to go and see my doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had a pretty full-on weekend, actually. I'd been out partying all weekend. So I got to the month and I think I was probably, now that I look back on it, I was probably just trying to distract myself.
Yeah.
And then I got to the Monday morning. And besides having a bit of Monday-itis because I was back at work after a huge weekend, I was, you know, found myself in the doctor's office. And it was only then when once I got
Did
to
Did you already have the appointment?
Yeah. It was only then once I got to the doctor in the morning that I was getting a bit nervous.
Yeah, and you'd probably be coming down, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was, yeah, sitting in the doctor's surgery where it really started to hit me. Then they called my name, went in there, and went and saw the doctor. And then he sat down and he goes, look, I've got your test results. You know, I was pretty certain there was no cancer there, but I have to tell you that you've got cancer. And then after that moment, it is true what they say. You don't hear another word the doctor says. He's just telling you all the things that you got, your options.
You had a girlfriend at the time. Was she with you?
I was on my own.
You were on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
So weird, isn't it, thinking about, and I don't want to go into that too much, but you would never be on your own in this relationship. Like, it's just an interesting insight as to how different people are in different relationships how, I don't know, and things evolve. Like, I think especially if you think you've just left an epic relationship and you're never going to find anything like it, I guarantee you're probably going to find something, I'm not going to say better, that I think I'm better than someone else, but I am going to say better suited to you and better suited to what your needs are. I wouldn't think I'm alone in saying that those kinds of appointments, I have an expectation for you to be there. And I would hope that at this point in the way we've sculpted our relationships, you would have that expectation of me.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. We would definitely be by each other's sides for all these situations.
That's just so full on for me to hear again that you had to hear that on your own.
Yeah.
So then you had the surgery, as you mentioned. You had all these different choices.
Yeah.
When was the conversation around children? When, how early or late did that come up that this was now going to affect future babies?
Hearing about, you know, what it's going to entail comes, you know, pretty much in that surgery. That was the stuff you don't hear when the doctor's, after he's told you have cancer and he's putting a brochure in front of you and then going, you need to think about this will happen, and it all happens in 5-10 minutes.
Right, and so you didn't hear any of it?
No,
really?
No,
right, and you believe that somewhere in there he was telling you this is going to affect how you have kids?
I don't think he probably said it in those words, but he just, you know, pointed to some things in a brochure and went, you know, you need to read over this because this is how it's going to affect you from now on if you have these surgeries. There's obviously different options in here. You can have a look at them and see what the effects of those are.
And I've looked at some of the pamphlets because, you know, I've done a bit of research around this, and it's interesting. The ones that I have seen are very much built for men that are much older. So the children part is not a major factor on some of those pamphlets. It's very much about you might not be able to ejaculate or, you know, those kinds of things. But
it's more about erections. I think it's not even
ejaculation. Yeah, it doesn't really say much about the sperm or what happens what that has to do with future families.
No.
So you go in and like I said, you make those decisions. So what's the conversation around that? What's your headspace? How is it working in terms of any thought around fertility, or is it just more, I need to get this cancer out?
That was it for me. I just wanted the cancer out of my body. You know, kids had, you know, it was like an entry thought at the time, but there was definitely no solid thinking around having kids at that age. So then I was willing to accept whatever side effects came with that. The main thing I was thinking about at the time was erections. You know, I want to make sure I can still have an erection. Because again, that's what the material that you're given is all about. Are you going to be able to, you know, not piss your pants all the time and be able to, you know, maintain your continence? And are you going to be able to have an erection? And they're the two things that are in those documents. And so they're the two things that are thrust into your mind. Then the next thing is that you're not going to be able to have kids the natural way. But it's never framed as in you're not going to be able to have kids.
And so when did you think about freezing your sperm?
That's the other thing they say. When you come back and you go and see the doctor again and it's like, well, do you want to freeze your sperm? You know, it was like, okay, we'll
go in. So it was just another box to tick.
Yeah,
right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think that's like, it's confronting for me to hear how little you thought about it. Obviously, you're faced with cancer and I wasn't there and you're fine now. And you did come out and they got it. And there's that treatment was the treatment to allow you to not have it spread and for it to be pretty contained, you know, where it's out, bang, smack. And that's there's a reason that you did that. But it's interesting on the other flip side of it where you hear that and it's only confronting because of how big of a reality it's become for us.
Yeah, it is now.
So then when you compare, obviously you've coming up with cancer in your life, and as I said earlier, I know that there's no comparison. You needed to make that decision. If you didn't have this experience, I don't even know if I would have been with you pre-cancer, Ben you were. You went through such a spiritual awakening and such a different shift in your life after your cancer that I really believe that, you know, we are together because of that. So there's nothing to say that I don't understand the seriousness of it. But now that we're so in trying for a baby, now we're like a year and a half in, now I have felt so many times that it is so much my journey and I'm so at times very alone in it. And that's from a physical perspective, not emotional. But I'm at the appointments, I'm at this, and it's all because of something that happened to you that I wasn't there for. And then you've just told me a story that you didn't really think about. You know, it's all so fucking, it's so layered, you know? Yeah.
And that, look, that guilt is ever present in me.
Oh, it's prevalent, babe. Like, as soon as you started talking about it, you can see you're trying to gear yourself up. And that's what I said when we've had really dark times or really big conversations. There's not a question. Like, it's not a guilt thing. It's a life. It's a, like, there's just not, when you're faced with no option, faced with no option. You can't put guilt to that.
Oh, yeah, I know. But it still definitely creeps up there. It's like, I know that I made the decision that was right for me at the time. Like, I couldn't have the foresight that, you know, of what my life was going to be like in 8 years' time and having this struggle to have kids. So I just had to make the right decision that was in front of me at the time. That still doesn't mean that, you know, when we're in the hospital and, you know, I'm lying next to you and we're waiting to find out if we're pregnant or not, or, you know, we're waiting to have an insemination or we're waiting to just have a test, that's, you know, it doesn't creep up there, you know, and you sit there and you go, you know, fuck, why can't we just be trying to have kids like everyone else?
Yeah, and we've had
a few.
I have
come to terms with it, like, to a great degree, but there will definitely still be times where it, you know, comes knocking and comes out to the surface. Yeah.
And it's just such a different process for me because you're so distant from it, and it, like I was saying earlier about the cancer joke and how when do you still bag people like in the midst of that conversation. Yeah. And so there's been so many times where I've been scared to feel anything because of what you went through. You know, it's almost like I don't have any right to feel this when you went through something so much more just devastating and hard. And, you know, and we're not even going to go into the details of the fact that you had to train yourself to get hard again and go through that whole process, which just to – do you want to just share with everybody how – that works now? Because I think people are like, do you have sex? Like, what's the deal? How is that? And I think it's important it comes from you.
Yeah. Well, we do have sex. Mm-hmm. Just to give a bit of background as to what happens, basically the nerves that control your erection and your sexual function are wrapped around your prostate for a man. So when you have your prostate removed, these days they're very, you know, technology is incredibly advanced and they have robots that perform these surgeries, you know. So their precision is, you know, high. But basically they do what's called nerve-sparing surgery. And most men will just have normal erectile function after a nerve-sparing surgery. I had to have some of my nerves removed because the cancer was so close to the edge of my prostate.
Which was devastating for you when you came out of surgery.
It was devastating when I came out of surgery. Yeah, that was the one major concern, honestly.
Yeah.
That was it. Like I was saying before, erections. I wasn't really thinking about kids at the time. I wanted to make sure I'd still have an erection. So I was pretty angry when I came out and he told me that he'd had to remove some of my nerves. Obviously, you're in a five, six-hour surgery. He's got to make the decision at that time. So, you know, you have to very quickly come to terms with that. It took me a while, but I did come to terms with it. After the surgery, I didn't have any sexual function. Mm. And the other thing is continence as well. So you have a catheter but your urethra runs through your prostate. So they have to remove a section of that and then stretch it and then tie it back together. Mm. So you have a catheter. After the surgery, so when you wake up, you have a catheter. And you have to wear that catheter for 2 weeks at home after the surgery, and you have a bag strapped to your leg. So you're wearing adult diapers, and you're not getting erections. So it's very, very emasculating experience. That was probably one of the darkest times. I've said that before.
Of your life.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And one of the darker times through that cancer journey, but definitely one of the darkest times of my life, yeah.
Yeah.
You're incapacitated. You can't do anything. You need help as well. Like, you can't really walk around.
And it's so interesting as well, because I think there would have been so little thought process around what that experience was like for someone of your age.
Mm,
so there's just so many things that make that very difficult.
Yeah. But, you know, on the plus side, I was young and I did kind of bounce back pretty quickly after that surgery. But my erections didn't bounce back very quickly. So there's different things they give you. Obviously, they give you tablets. You've got Viagra and Cialis that they give you when you come out of the hospital. They're here, like, take these. This will be therapy, you know, get your erections back going. And they just did nothing. And then there's another drug called Cavaject, which is like a needle, and you inject that into your penis to try and give you an erection. After a little while, I did that a few times, did get an erection, but it was incredibly painful. So I kind of just gave up. I just stopped, you know, trying for a little while and hoped it would come back naturally. And it probably took about a year. Mm-hmm. And then I tried tablets again, and the tablets kind of brought it back. And then it steadily, after that, my erections came back. So
and then it built over time, like almost kind of muscle memory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I remember hearing a story of someone saying that, you know, they would, some guy who had no feeling in his legs, he'd had a spinal injury or something, and he would drag himself across stones so he could kind of tell his body that, you know, these legs have feeling, you know, and got himself back, you know, walking. And
it's so easy to emotionally black out too. I think when you have trauma in any area, I know as someone who's been also sexually abused, you know, to some degree, there's parts of your body that block energy because it's traumatic and you don't want to feel anything there because something happened to you. So it's the same deal. And so maybe it was also a year of emotional healing where, you know, your body was kind of like, okay, I'm going to also clear out some of these blockages because it's been incredibly damaging.
Yeah, I didn't think about it like that.
But yeah, my heart.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Mm.
Anyways, yeah, so they did come back and, we have sex now. It's back to normal, so to speak. The only thing is,
pretty normal. It's not. Yeah. It's not perfect. Like, and I think that's important for everyone. It takes, you know, I think what happens is, and you know, I don't know if this is okay to say, but all normal guys will have different types of experiences, as will women, but guys in particular will have different experiences depending on where their head's at, you know, whether you've had a good day, a bad day, you're stressed, you're drunk, you're fucked off your head, all those kinds of things. And I think in your scenario and in our scenario, it can be a little bit probably more extreme in those scenarios. Mm. So if you're super stressed or super drunk or those kinds of things,
it can be a bit sensitive.
It's a bit harder to come back. Yeah. So it's it's normal. And there are times, you know, where there's different ways that we kind of, there's been plenty of ways to skin a cat, let's just say that much. But I think that it's certainly not perfect.
Yeah.
And we've had to work really hard.
Well, it's very different, yeah.
Yeah, we've had to work really hard to continue to try and break a lot of, I guess, the fears and the new way of having sex. I mean, I'm the first relationship that you've been really quite sexually active with since this all happened. So we've had to work through that together at times, which has been it's been so hard, you know. Right,
very hard because you have two people in two very different circumstances with very different needs. So.
I think for us as well, for the first year and a bit of our relationship, we didn't really come across any of those challenges. Mm. We were just so in love, and it was in the honeymoon phase, and it was all very exciting. And so for me, I kind of met you and thought, well, there's no side effects to this. Like, God, okay, yeah, sure, we're going to have fertility treatment, but in this department, it's all fine. Mm. And then they started to appear the more stressful our life got.
Yeah.
And it was tricky at times. But I think
sorry to interrupt. We need to explain one thing as to why we actually have to have fertility treatment. The added thing is that even though I do get erections, I don't ejaculate.
Yeah.
So I cannot inseminate you. So that is why we have to do IUI, which is like the artificial insemination.
Which is what we've now done, three times, planning for the fourth, which we'll get into next week of what IUI is, why we've, well, obviously you can see why we've chosen it. We don't necessarily need to jump straight to IVF.
Yeah.
When I was tested a year ago of where my body was and where my egg count was and all those kinds of things, everything was in pretty tip-top shape to the point where we fell pregnant on the first insemination. Mm. So, the journey never ends there. It's never as simple as you think. But IUI for us has been, you know, was definitely, I guess, the option of choice because it doesn't have the hormones, doesn't have all the extra, and we could keep it as natural as possible because we had a person that was quite, healthy. And then we also had good sperm. It was just about getting it together. Which, look, it sounds like something really simple. And when we first got together, I really did see it very simply like that. Mm. I was like, I want you to be the father of my kids. You shared your story with me before we'd even slept together. It was all very clear from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to get that in the way of my love story, you know. Mm. But it was a part of my love story. You are who you are because of where you've come from.
Yeah.
And I was just glad that, I was just glad that you had lived life and you were shaped to be the way you were for exactly as you were. There was nothing about you that I thought, oh, God, never once. I never, ever did. I've never been sure of anything in my fucking life than that you are the father of my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just thought, well, that's just going to be a project we'll figure out. But then as it's the reality started to kick in, I used to masturbate over conceiving. I mean, I've said that on other shows that I've worked on.
Yeah.
It's such a magical kind of thought process for me. Mm. And so I had to really grieve that. And I still had a trigger the other night because, you know, when you do IVF or when you do IUI, there's still a chance for a lot of couples to maybe do the whole bloody go away, have sex, take the stress off and fall pregnant.
Mm.
And we have, looking at our calendar the next kind of few months and thinking about if we're ready to try again or what we're going to be doing, I ovulate right smack bang on two weekends of the next few months, the next 2 months with things where we're out of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do IUI or IVF, you'll understand that you can't be away from your hospital. There's no way for you to get inseminated.
Mm.
And not to mention all the drugs and the tracking and everything that goes on around that, which, again, we'll get into. But it was just such a devastating thing for me. And even though you come to terms with it, there's just little things like, you know, there's a wedding in particular that we're going to in a couple months' time. And I don't know, my brain just got away for a second and was like thinking about the story that other couples may say because it's on this hippie thing, you know, hippie kind of paddock in the middle of fucking nowhere. We're staying in some big tent. Everyone's got tents around the big kind of marquee circus tent type thing where the wedding is. And I thought to myself, oh, someone could be falling pregnant in one of those tents and then tell their kids years later, oh, you know, we got pregnant in the tent at Lizzie's wedding and blah, 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 in the teepee. Yeah. And I just burst into tears. I was like, that can never be our fucking story, And not only that, we don't get to try now because we go to the wedding and it's just so many factors. So no matter where you turn, you kind of seem to really get to grips with the whole thing, and then there'll just be something like that that will remind you so starkly that you are different and it just is so definite farce.
Yeah, that's what, that story I was saying the other day. It's like, you know, Posh and Bex, you know, conceive in Brooklyn. They have their, call their child Brooklyn, you know, Kanye and Kim.
And we're going to call our house, our child. Ramwick.
Yeah,
our,
yeah.
No. The Ramwick Hospital.
And this is our daughter, Women's Hospital.
This is our daughter, Marjorie.
Yeah.
Because it's after the nurse.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I get it.
No real names are used on this podcast.
No, no.
Yeah.
I get it.
It is. Yeah, it's hard. And that's definitely been, I just couldn't believe how much I had to grieve. Mm. And again, like I was saying earlier, when you're with someone that's had cancer, there's so many other layers of allowing yourself just to feel naturally.
Yeah,
you go through guilt yourself for feeling something, and then you feel shame because you feel selfish, and then you feel like you can't tell anyone, and then you finally tell someone, and then you have to go through the grief process from there after going through all these processes of stopping yourself feeling at the start. Like, it's hectic.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like I said to you, I've really come to terms with this is who I am. And I don't.
This is me.
You love that movie. But no, like, I honestly, like, I was just sitting here thinking then when you were talking, I was just, you know, I don't think about myself who I was before I had cancer. I really do feel like I've had cancer for a reason, and the things it's taught me and the life it's brought me, and it's brought me you, are all things, like, the great things that were meant to happen to me on this path, you know. And I'm not trying to take away from any of the hard stuff, but so much good has come from it. So, you know, I take that good, and then I need to work with it every day to make sure that I'm on top of it. But I do feel very comfortable in who I am now. So
I think that's hard for me too, because you have had so much time to get there.
That's why I mentioned it, yeah, because I know it's been 8 years that I've, you know, lived with this. And it's been a constant. And it's been over that 8 years, it's been an eight-year growth process getting to here. You know, sometimes I sit here and go, wow, what am I going to be like in another 8 years? It'll be incredible.
Cool.
Because it is a very ever-present story. But you've only had the 2 years, you know.
And so, I don't want to compare that I think I'm going through even anything remotely that you've gone through.
No, but it's still a process.
Yeah, it is a process. And it's a process where I am very affected, and it's a process that I also need to go through to support you appropriately too, because there's still trauma, there's still stuff you're working through. And I think that surprised you over the past few months.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, what this process of trying for a baby has brought up for you. Mm. Like, it reminds you every single day of a decision, of an event that happened, of, you know, like,
it's made me a bit angry at times.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, I really did think I was, you know, that I had this shit under control, you know?
And
not under control, you know what I mean? I'd process this shit, you know, and I'd taken from it what I needed and you know, made it a part of who I am and being proud of who I am. But then there's definitely been some times during this period, during this journey of trying to have a baby, where I've just been, this is fucked.
Yeah, and it does. But I think it's fucked for anyone that's doing fertility treatment. If you're listening and you're, you know, relating to some of this, to none of this, but one thing that you do relate to is that I think you do think you get on top of a feeling when it comes to this path, and then something will just smack you in the face, and you actually turn around to look to see if there's someone that's thrown a ball at the back of your head, because you feel like you're so surprised that there's still another blow. It's just crazy, because there's nothing in your life that I feel like you want so much that can disappoint you so much in the space of just kind of, I don't know, it's such a unique experience. But I think that's one thing that I'm sure everyone can relate to. But I think we'll wrap it up there, and I think the next stage for us to talk about is the IUI process, and a little bit more about how we go about that, how we decided to do that, and what we're looking at doing next.
And what our journey's been like.
Yeah.
The IUI process.
So yeah.
It's been a roller coaster in itself.
It has. And we've gone from private to public as well. So we've got all these different thought processes and experiences around that.
Yeah.
And also looking at down the barrel of the lens into IVF, and also having a successful pregnancy and then a miscarriage. So there's lots to come. We want to share it all with you because we have, like we've said at the beginning of the show, felt incredibly isolated, and we have such incredible friends and family around us. But there's just something different about someone saying, yeah, and then when you got the bloods the second time, you know, someone that's really getting, particularly for me anyway, that really understands the reality, because I think so many of my mates don't even really know that. I mean, obviously my closest friends, but people don't really understand what you have to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so maybe you haven't, you're not in this space, but you're interested to learn. And so we will share that for you as well.
Yeah, and it's dealt up different experiences for both you and I.
Yeah.
So, you know, coming together and finding a place to meet in the middle is, you know, the kind of, is what we want to, you know, show or tell other people, you know?
Yeah.
The both sides of the story and then how we've kind of come together.
Yeah, and I think particularly with some of our stories, a lot of couples have said it's brought us closer together with her. But initially on a few of the harder parts...
It pull you apart.
It didn't bring us. Yeah, we were so early in our relationship. So, you know, we've got a bit of a different side to that as well, which we'll share very soon.
Yeah.
We do this show for you, and we do this show for anybody that this is going to help. So if there is anybody that you think may benefit from hearing these stories and our story, please do share.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, word of mouth is really important for this stuff. If you're in a forum or if you're talking to other, you know, other groups of mothers, or there's particular men that, you know, you think have also had male infertility, even though that's not specifically Ben's case, but it is quite similar.
Yeah.
Share the podcast in the groups, like give other people resources to be able to hear two people in the midst of it, because I say that not just to get our podcast out there and you know, stroke our ego. I say that because I fucking wish so desperately that we had more of these kinds of stories in front of me. So if you've got suggestions as well, I'll post this up on our Instagram and ask for suggestions on other content or other things that you've watched, so I can consume those, because you might have some ideas. But
absolutely.
A rating and review always helps us get that out as well. But yes, like please. We said, our main focus is really is just finding this story and this show to find the right people.
Absolutely. It's for you guys.
Okay, till next week.
Until next week. Farewell, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
So long.
Goodbye, bye-bye.
See you soon.
Okay, I have to go to the toilet.
Bijou Podcasts, the home of taboo conversations.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.